Join the Pop Life Podcast conversation. Follow us on Twitter at The Pop Life Podcast. Find us on iTunes at The Pop Life Podcast. Be sure to rate us, please. And find us on SoundCloud and share and like and subscribe. Thanks.
Welcome to the Pop Life Podcast, coming to you from the Crosby Collective Studio, starring your hosts, Jeffrey Sledge, Naima Cochran, and Sean Young. If it's top of mind in pop culture, it's up for discussion. Thank you for joining us this week. The Pop Life begins in 3, 2, 1.
All right, Pop Life Podcast. Today is January 8th?
7th, 2020. Don't rush us too much. We already in the almost the second week of January already. Damn.
You know, in the middle of a world war. World War III about to start. They shooting up. It says tens of, like, a lot of missiles got shot at a U.S. air base in Iraq just a few minutes ago.
Yep.
So.
And then one of the Iranian leaders just simply tweeted the Iranian flag the same way that Trump just tweeted the American flag. I really believe he thinks this shit is a game. Like, I really believe that.
Yeah, man, fucked up so crazy, bro. Like, oh my God. Like, you know, I think that there's a lot of people who don't, and that shit, far from me saying I'm some fucking expert, because trust me, I am not. But I think people don't have any grasp of the Middle East and the Middle Eastern countries, and they kind of think it's all one big kind of third world, living in in ancient times and rocks and mountains and shit. And Iran is a very progressive country. Tehran, which is the capital of Iran is a really like progressive city, like, you know, popping city. You know, they have, you know, nightlife and, you know, driving Lamborghini. Like, it's all, it's not like Iraq, which is a bit more, you know, back in the day kind of energy and was hoarded, like their riches were kind of hoarded by a small group of people. Iran is very different. And Iran, you know, they're proud people. They are Persian descent. They house a lot of the kind of wonders of the world. You know, they have like the massive museums with the ancient artifacts from, you know, thousands of years ago. This is a whole different animal. The your man to poke this bear, thinking he's some type of tough guy, he really doesn't understand what he's gotten this country into.
I think that he does.
Well, I think that he knows what it means for him. I don't think he really. We all know that Trump doesn't have a real grasp on foreign policy, like, at all. He doesn't listen.
Or history.
And, like, in the 2 weeks before Christmas, like, 5 top-level Pentagon officials resigned. And I think it might have been because they knew that he was pushing for this. Not all of them were in roles that were pertinent to the strike. But, you know, he didn't get congressional approval. We all know that he doesn't listen to security briefings. But he's obsessed with a show of military might, which is fascinating for somebody who dodged the draft 5 fucking times. Mm-hmm. He's obsessed with, like, missiles and tanks and, you know, weaponry and all of that other stuff. So I think he thinks it's war games, you know, and not really taking into account what retaliation could look like, how they could hit us. And I think that, you know, a lot of people are saying that we've all been overreacting to talk about World War III. And I haven't been suggesting World War III, but there are other acts of war other than war hitting our soil. And it is also still our people going off to fight, in addition to all the people who have already deployed in various areas where Iran can get to. You know, so even though they may not be able to strike us here on our soil, they can get to our citizens and our, you know, properties, our bases, et cetera, in other ways.
Mm-hmm. What are you going to say, bro?
It's of no consequence to him. It's of no consequence to him. His family is protected by Secret Service. He lives and moves around in some of the most secured areas and vehicles and homes and properties that one could be in. There is no one more secure in the United States of America than president of the United States.
Right.
It's that simple, right? So again, it is of no consequence to him. It is, he is, you know,
he's singularly focused. He doesn't care about the
Yes, American. He doesn't give a shit.
You got no skin in the game.
No skin in the game. No one's gonna, you know, I can't say that word enough. It's inconsequential to him.
Yeah.
This is, he might as well be playing fucking a battleship. Like, yeah. that's what he's doing at this point. Now, listen, I'm, like you said, Jeff, I'm not completely well-versed in the nuances, in the intra-politics of these foreign countries in the Middle East, and I won't pretend like I am, but I know that you just don't fucking bomb a general and think that that's just going to just be, like, okay. Like, somebody's just going to take...
The equivalent of the vice president of the country. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So whether or not he was a bad man or whether or not he deserved it, again, it should not be part and parcel to the decision of a politician on what he should do. But this is what he does, which is he never eases his hands out the lion mouth. He always snatches it out.
Yep.
It's his nature. So at this point, I think he was fully clear on what he wanted to do. I think, like Nas said, those people resigned because they knew that he was hell-bent on doing that. I think the war machine is all good for all of the Republican Party.
Right.
They get to, wear that flag and cloak themselves in this bullshit honor and ultimately what is hero porn and patriot porn.
In the midst of, impeachment hearings, in a re-election year.
Yeah. So this is actually perfect timing.
It's all strategy.
Yeah. And my prediction is not like some old prediction that, other people haven't said, but I was saying tonight before we got on, like, yes, I believe there will be some ground combat, but I think a lot of this will be cyber combat. It'll be stealth. It'll be them attacking, different places that are U.S. either U.S. bases and stuff like that. I don't think it's just going to be like Vietnam, where just like you're on one side and we're on the other side, and we're just firing rockets at each other. It's going to be some other shit. And Iran is very very well versed in cyber attack. They're one of the
cyber attack, and ultimately, I think that we're going to have some soft target attacks.
That's what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. I would not be surprised if there's a fucking Times Square mass shooting. That would not shock me.
Exactly.
Something at the Statue of Liberty or some, a fucking bus gets blown up or something like that. I would not be surprised. We don't know what's going on. I read that they were detaining... even if you were an American citizen.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, they basically are just detaining you right now. I'm pretty sure that they're living in a hostile environment, those that are here and those that have family there. So, look, I'm hoping they kind of figure that out, and then I'm hoping that this all plays out well for them. I saw today somebody had already posted a RIP to a soldier. There was an attack this evening. And I mean, this is not some bullshit, we might see action every... I mean, it sounds to me like they're dropping these fucking kids off and they ain't getting to it.
Got time to go to the barracks, nigga.
They're putting them right in the drop zone. And I mean, but that's the other thing, right? Like, there were some World War III jokes on Twitter. A lot of them are funny, but as always, Twitter sometimes goes too far. And there was some backlash, like, oh, these are real people. And, I saw two sides of it. Like, I saw some people who were actually vets, like, we're the main ones cracking the jokes. Like, because you have to kind of, this is our coping mechanism. But of course, some people went way too far because we don't have a real concept of war. To us is like an alien thing. It's like, it's theoretical, right? Mm-hmm. And unless you have a family member who's been in active service, war is like theoretical, but there definitely are, like, there've been thousands of people deployed already.
Yep.
Right? In the midst, like Sean just said, there's an RP posted of a soldier already. Like, there are very real people and very real consequences here. And we can't act like, and there are people there in Iran, like it's other brown people, you know? Yeah. So somebody reposted the Cat Williams clip from A Pimp Chronicles where he was like, you know, they're like, the government is really slick. They won't be like, oh, we killed X number of children, X number of men, X number of women. They'll be like, we killed X number of insurgents. He was like, niggas be in the house like, I don't even know no insurgent. Yes. I don't know not one insurgent. You can kill all them motherfuckers. You know, it's just not, it's just very abstract to us. And I think we all have to grasp the concept that, like, there's very real danger here. Like you guys both said, it can touch us here, even if it's not boots on the ground here. It can still touch us here. But also, like, our people are going over there. So it's proper for us to be, like, scared and outraged and concerned, et cetera.
What I found, you know, you could say a lot of the memes and jokes were definitely funny. But what I found, and it's kind of been, to me, it's kind of been black folks, I don't know if it's coping mechanism or whatever, but what was interesting about the memes was, like, it's kind of like the prevailing feeling of black folks in general, which is like, you white folks put this dude in jail, I mean in office, we ain't got nothing to do with that shit.
We ain't part of none of that shit.
Y'all need to fix it. That's kind of like the thing, like, hey man, that's y'all boy. Y'all, we told you.
And look, I'm not big on this whole patriotism thing, especially the way that it's done. But like, I promise you, my nigga, like if somebody pulls out an AR in Times Square, he's definitely not telling the black people, you should
move out the way, bro.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like the reality is he's coming to do as much carnage as possible. Yeah.
Whoever catches him.
The reality is that black and poor kids get recruited into the military more.
That's another thing that I was getting ready to say. I mean, you have a lot of people that are, you know, the military for by and large is really sort of manned out of states that don't really have a lot of options. I would say, I think that's fair, right? Yeah, like you know, southern states, and you know, kids kind of have that choice. You know, do I go to school or, you know, collect this debt, or do I go to the military and hopefully my ass isn't, like we said,
we ain't
in a drop zone. You know, I'm not putting a drop zone in my first 4 years, but. Yeah. You know, we have coping mechanisms as well too.
Yeah.
Especially for those of us that live in New York. Like, dude, people ride through that tunnel, man, like thinking a bomb is gonna go off is not some foreign shit. That's
don't forget the subways, bro.
The subways.
Last summer when the whole grids was getting shut down, it was like, okay, that's odd. Like I said on this show, that felt like a test. You know what I'm saying? Like, to me, I felt like they was testing some shit. Like, what will happen if we shut down the whole Times Square grid? And it caused pure chaos in the city. And that was just here. They could do any city in the country. So, again, I'm not wishing bad on anybody, but it's kind of... one more thing, because we don't want to take up the whole show talking about war, but with this attack that happened today, what I also find interesting from what I'm seeing in very early is it felt like the U.S. was, like, caught by surprise.
Well,
like they were really
I don't think they were caught by surprise. I think that I think what you see, you know, this is going to be the very difficult part of getting through the bullshit, which is how this stuff is reported, the way this stuff is sent to us. I mean, they sent ballistic missiles, guys. Like, they didn't fucking send pigeons. These weren't carrier pigeons that dropped bombs on them while they were eating, okay? Fucking ballistic missiles getting let off. I would like to think that at minimum the U.S. military is able to see and notice a fucking ballistic missile coming at them, right?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what else to say. Like, this is, you guys are at war. Like, this idea that, you know, we're going to tell you we're only attacking between 12 and 4 p.m. Yeah.
Nah, it's on site. Literally.
Like, literally, figuratively,
all
of that shit. Like,
yeah, so it's on site.
And listen, it's not that, you know, we still are engaged in combat, like, outside of this. So, you know, there's never really been a peacetime here. So, I wish those kids I keep saying kids, but they're not old kids. But I wish
they're kids to us. You know what I'm saying?
I wish those. Well, but mostly because we saw pictures of basically like 18 and 19 year old kids who were like, "Holy shit!" Yeah, like, I never really thought that.
I think this shit was actually going to happen. Exactly. Yeah.
You know, listen, man, it's very real, man.
Yeah.
When that USS Cole shit hit, man, like my man was like, "Nigga, I had to go."
Yeah, yeah. Like, oh, yeah. I saw something today that. Posted that a cat was saying that his friend of his husband like got the call last night, didn't even get a chance to say goodbye. Like, nigga, you got to come now. Like, it ain't no like, tomorrow afternoon. It's like, nah, be like,
nigga, think you come. Hey, I can't make it on Thursday, y'all.
How about two? Come on, next Tuesday.
Is there a 6 o'clock flight?
Yeah, 6 o'clock. I gotta take the kids.
Nigga might try to shoot his pinky toe off.
Yeah, we got the man coming to get the leaves out the gutter. Can we do nah, you got to go.
My Amazon ain't come. I gotta sign for that one.
This Netflix acting funny. I got the man coming by here tomorrow. So shit. So please, like you said, blessings and prayers to all of them, because it's.
Oh, and man. The people on the other side, man.
Yeah, yeah, everybody.
There's going to be a lot of innocent folks.
On both sides, dealing with this shit. So before we jump into the actual show, this is our first show of 2020. Obviously, we've been off the air for about almost 3 weeks now, I guess. Real quick, I guess let's talk real quick about what we did during the break. Because we didn't really see each other during the break. I saw you nine.
You were right for Christmas.
Yeah, right for Christmas, and I ain't see you after that.
Sean and the family. Yeah,
he had the best. He had the best hand.
Everybody.
It was nice.
The youngs had the best hand. I want to go and be like them.
So 2/3 of my timeline was, if not in Ghana and West Africa, between Ghana and Nigeria, because I know a lot of people who went to Lagos and then went to Accra.
Now, how far are they apart on by plane? It's a pretty short flight, right?
I don't think it's that long.
Like an hour or something? Yeah.
No, it's probably more than an hour, but okay. I don't think it's like more than maybe a 2-3 hour flight.
Right. Okay. So tell us about Ghana, man.
So, yeah, man, like we went.
You were with the official Essence.
We traveled on what we'd like to call. Delegate. Yeah, so we kind of called it the party plane. Okay. Which was basically.
Tina was on your plane. You ain't tell us that, Sean.
Yes. She
yeah, and, look at her, face. If y'all can see Sean's face right now.
Hey, Mateo.
Her and Mr. Richard. First of all, I did not know Mr. Richard was that big.
He's a big guy.
He's a tall man,
He's like a legit. He's like a legit 6'2", mm-hmm. and his motherfucking hands is like baseball mitts.
Yeah, he's a
big guy. My Uncle Fred. We had a wonderful time. Obviously, going that way, it was a chartered flight, so it was wildly convenient.
Comfortable
for us. Yeah, very, very comfortable. There were lots of people on the plane. Some people you would recognize, many you wouldn't. There were a lot of folks that were in corporate America as well that have obviously built relationships with. Rich and the Essence and Shea Moisture family over the years. What I was very happy to see was so many folks bringing their kids.
Yes.
Like, this was not like an adult only type vacation.
Wasn't a party boat.
Not like that. And I think actually, I'm not sure if these kids were from Houston, but I think they were like a group of kids that I think were sponsored. Maybe about 8 or 10 kids.
Good.
That came, and I remember, we kind of were pulling up to the charter, and the kid was like, he was just so geeked, and it was just the most amazing thing to see, because this was his first time on a plane. Like, they had obviously flown
imagine
in.
Imagine that being your first experience. It's all down.
So there. Player.
It ain't like this regular nigga.
So next time you fly, and it's on Southwest, my nigga.
Nigga, you're going to be Southwest in the middle, exactly. And your luggage going to be gone.
Word.
God bless.
Word.
Enjoy. So we got there. There were two hotels, the Mövenpick and the Kempinski. We stayed at the Kempinski. It was, you know, a great experience. You know, obviously you get to Ghana, and I had been to Africa before. I'd been to Angola. I'd been to, you know, quite a few places in Northern Africa and South Africa. So I did not have that fucking warped, Americanized idea that, you know, I'm just going to be
pulling. Where's the McDonald's?
Yeah, it was, which actually, funny thing is, we noticed that we never saw one.
Good.
There was a Burger King.
Okay.
There was a Burger King. There was no McDonald's, but it was, you know, look, man, we pulled in, and it was great. It was a beautiful experience. We had activities. I mean, the time difference had a foot in our ass kind of immediately because we basically landed and we kind of hit the deck running.
Okay.
So, you know, every day was, you know, 8 o'clock in the morning, you know, 7 o'clock, you know, getting up and getting out.
Yeah.
We actually took one of the excursions. Everyone had gone to the Cape Coast Castle.
Okay.
One day, but then there was a smaller group, which we were a part of, and we actually flew on another charter from Akure to Kumasi. Okay. And we got to go to the Ashanti Kings Festival.
Wow.
Every 42 days, they operate on a 42-day calendar.
Oh, wow.
In their culture, and every 42 days, they basically have this festival.
Wow.
And so we get there, man, and it was like really sort of breathtaking, man, to see like the village chiefs, and you know, they have the guys holding the big ass umbrellas, and you know, when the king was coming out, you know, the dude was like, "You gotta take your hat off."
Yeah.
Like it was very, very formal, very traditional. He obviously has his, you know, guard around. Mm-hmm. In his inner circle, and they're literally carrying him like a king, man. And he's like, you know, he's dripped like in the finest of gold,
in the finest of it.
It was, so it was, that was pretty good. We you know, we enjoyed that. We went out, we, you know, we ate, we came back, we did a day of service. I can't remember the exact name of this particular place that we've gone to, but I actually went with them to the women's health initiative.
Okay.
So I actually just went with Jordan and Mona and a couple of the other folks that was with us. I was a little disappointed because it was only about 7 of us that showed up for that.
Yeah, you would want more people to kind of do that.
Yeah, I would have liked to have seen more people, but listen,
it is what it is. You know what I mean?
And listen, people had done things. There were other activities, so it wasn't like it was only like 2 things. It was like 4 different things you could have chosen from for your day of service.
Okay.
And in all fairness, it came a little later on in the trip.
Okay.
So, you know, people were tired, man, because it was like Afrocella one night, which, you know, that wasn't my bag. So I stayed behind and I said, you know, God bless. y'all enjoy. But it was an amazing experience, and mostly like the people were incredibly welcoming.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you didn't really feel like, you know, you would have people coming up to you and trying to hustle you
That's
the nature.
They hustle you with fucking Essence Fest, like whatever.
Literally, that's my point, right?
Yeah,
like it is what it is.
Yeah.
You know, I overpaid for a couple pieces, you know, things.
What are you gonna do?
What is it, right? Like,
yeah.
It's not that really that big of a deal. But it was a great environment where people were.
What I wanted to ask is, and maybe I'm just not in the loop, but like, why was this year such a year?
2019, because 1619 was the beginning of the
1619 pandemic. There's a distinction that 1619 is the year of the first, you know, Africans being enslaved on American soil.
Right.
That's not necessarily, you know, the beginning of slavery.
I got you. Yeah,
here.
Mm-hmm.
So the last day, we actually had taken a trip to the Cape Coast Castle.
To the door of no return.
That was.
Can you feel the energy still?
So there's a point where you go on this tour and you literally go to the dungeon, like the actual dungeon wow. in which they were kept. Wow. And there is, you know, because we have phones, obviously, right? Like you. So the first thing I noticed when I went into this dungeon was what looked like almost like a urinal tract. Right, like a, like you ever go? You remember, like back in the days, you were going to a bar, or going to and there's like
had a long
stall, and that's what it looked like. So that was the first thing that came to mind for me.
Okay,
and then there's like this thick, you know, sort of coating around, and the man was telling us when they had excavated the building uh-huh. that they found that was literally like. There was a layer of like human excrement from blood,
wow,
wet tears,
like a layer of
defecation. It was no place for it to go.
Right.
Damn.
The amount of people that they were stuffing into those things, it was just sort of like crazy to stand on those stairs and know like
what happened there.
Yeah, just to know that those were like. They stepped off those stairs onto that sand, onto a small boat, and went to a ship. And that was it.
And it never came back.
It was kind of eerie. I had kind of prepared for that a little bit, so it didn't like hit me but in the same way.
Were people crying and stuff like that around there?
I wouldn't say they were quiet. Yes. So there were a couple people that were being, you know, like you kind of go with the tour guide. So you might have, you know, 8 people with you, you might have 20 people with you, right? And so at one point, you know, we're listening to our guide, and then there's like some other lady, and they're like being fucking super loud and
right, and it's a solemn moment,
laughy and jokey. And it's like, look, I ain't saying you gotta be here and like that you gotta cry. Yeah. Like no one's asking you to do
that. At least be respectful, damn.
You should just be respectful of other people and just be courteous. Like the fucking man is talking. Like you.
Yeah, I can't even hear what he's saying.
So yeah. So
see, I'm that guy. Yo, I can't hear what he's saying. Like, yeah, I'm that guy.
Well, that was Mona. Who basically,
God bless her.
Stopped dude and was like, yo, like what the fuck?
Yeah, nigga.
You know, so
yeah. You come here every day, like this is it, bro. Like
yeah. and to think that there are basically several of those throughout Ghana.
Yeah.
But I wanted
to there's another one in I can't remember. There's another one. There's one in Senegal, maybe? There's one
that's not that far from there. Yeah. It's one that's like you can literally see it in the distance.
Right.
But I was glad that we saw that last because it was something that I wanted to see, but I did not want this to feel like a trauma trip for
the
kids. I didn't want them to come away with feeling like it was beautiful for them to go and see that king.
Of course.
Right.
And to see, you know, all of, the, you know, just everything, man.
In 2019, this ain't like looking at an old book. Like, he's right there.
Yeah. And then there was a museum in this park area that we had gone to. And so we had gone through the museum and, you know, you go through everything there. So we did the whole touristy.
As you should. Thing,
and you know? It was, you know, look, man, it was great. We went, we had a great time. Some of the nightlife was amazing.
I bet.
There was a lounge called Exhale.
Pop.
That was, nigga, that might as well have been on 116th Street. That might as well have been a Tav, nigga. It was popping.
I had so many friends who went, and what I loved about what I was watching is that different friends of mine, as many people were there, friends, digital friends, industry friends, whatever, as many people were there, they were all having different experiences. So I had some people who I saw who were traveling, and it was all just straight party, party, party. There were day parties, night parties, galas. You know, and it was a lot of like open air settings, like on some Nikki Beach type shit. You know what I mean? Like just
it was dope.
People like what you were doing, like doing some of the more touristy stuff. Friends to the show, Dr. Freddie, Fredar, Mavara.
Yeah, so I watched her gram. Yeah.
Well, she also goes back to Ghana.
She goes there pretty often, right?
Yeah, she told me that we actually had a conversation about Ghana last year, and she was telling me that it is so friendly to Black Americans. There's a lot of expats there, apparently. And she told me that the first time she ever came back from Ghana after spending an extensive amount of time there, like, she literally cried because she didn't
want it.
And I really am impressed with Ghana, because what this really was a marketing campaign, right? They kicked it off at the top of this year.
So people would start making it a destination.
Yeah, well, Bosma St. John, Ebro, I don't know why Ebro. Ebro.
Yeah, Ebro's very involved for the past couple of years, though. He's been going back and forth, right?
I don't know about the past couple of years, but I know he was part of the group that kicked it off.
He definitely went last year.
It was top of this year. They did it top of this year. They kicked
off. Oh, so maybe it was top of 19 he went.
Right. They kicked off top year return like last New Year's Eve. Top of 2019.
Top of 19, and then he came back.
2019, right.
Yeah.
And like Boris Kodjo and his wife and some other people were part of like this delegation to get their celebrity and influencer friends to come over and kick off like this whole year of return thing. And then
his brother as well. His brother Patrick was very instrumental.
Okay.
Ebro's brother?
No.
Boris brother? Okay.
And then adding in like Richelieu and creating the Essence Festival. There were a lot of other different entities who were over there, like doing events.
So are they planning on doing an offshoot of the Essence Fest in Ghana now?
Yeah, I think it's a completely different festival, though, because this was
different artists and stuff. But
this was not like a music and culture festival. This was specifically about.
Okay. But you think Essence is going to end up doing like something like that?
It wouldn't shock me if this becomes an annual trip.
There's a lot happening already, because there's Afrochella, and then there's actually an Afro Pump right after Afrochella.
Yeah, it's a lot going on.
What I do like, and this is obviously really piqued my interest, kind of watching it as well, as and it, like Nye said, as a market campaign, but it's a market campaign that I think is working, because we all go, look, a lot of us, there are definitely like people who kind of lead the way in the trailblazers, but then a lot of us are followers, right? So first years ago it was Dominican Republic, or it was got to go to Ocho Rio, so you got to go, it was all these kind of places, Cancun and then Cabo, all these places that people kind of like, oh, you ain't been to Tulum. But so now I feel like a lot of us are gonna do this trip. Like I said, I'm going to Africa.
Yeah.
And I like that we're going to go back, quote unquote, back home.
Yes, but,
and give money to the motherland. I mean, I know it's a lot of
layers. But the point is giving money to the motherland, right? Because a lot of people were like, Ghana's not an aesthetic. And one of the things that Freddie said especially was, it's beautiful to see everybody. She was like, it's a very singular experience. Because imagine, you're over there and you're literally just bumping into niggas like you was in Harlem, you know what I mean? I know he was over here. But there are, there are more marginalized areas, less popular areas that really need the resources. So, I mean, I guess what I'm saying is that I would hate to see it become an experience for the gram.
A lot of it will, but I also think that we have to look at some of the good that comes from those things, because Dominican Republic has done well in their tourist department.
Absolutely.
Because of the gram, right? Because Jamaica. Those things. Well, in fairness, tourism has been Jamaica's bag.
True.
Since the 60s, right? Like
since they put that chick in Jamaica in
the way. Oh yeah, the girl that robbed the
pop. It was actually Trinidadian, but that's another story. but my point is Jamaica kind of has that down. Now the thing about Ghana versus some of the other Caribbean countries, it's obviously that level of time and distance, right? Like, it's not an easy trip. I don't want to,
Now, how long? How long is that flight?
It was it's 9 hours going. It was 11 hours coming home.
And that's y'all flying private. I was looking at flights, because I was gonna do the trip, except I kept fucking around because I wanted to fly business, and the business tickets were like around $3,000. Because the reason I wanted to fly business, because when you're flying commercial,
You want to be comfortable.
You also are basically gonna end up doing a layover. You're looking like at a 20-hour travel day. Like, it's on travel day. Like, Sean and them are flying direct on private. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's not quick.
Yeah, so, I mean, I looked, really interesting. And, like Nye said, there was a lot of people that I knew that went, y'all and Shaka. And,
oh, I got me one of them fits, too.
You got a suit?
You
ready to go?
I went in there. So they had a little mall, which was right next to the hotel. They're still building out. God bless them. But they had a Versace collection store in there.
Oh, okay.
Which, none of that shit's for me.
Yeah.
And then right next to them was a dude, Chocolate Clothing is the name of it. And dude had, apparently he had done stuff for T.I. He's done stuff for Steve Harvey. So he pulled out the tape measure, hit me up, and I came back like 48 hours later. Got my suit.
He was good to go.
Bruh, he laced Justin. Justin got a suit.
Nice.
So that's the, to me, going there, going to the mom and pops.
Yeah,
like, even if there was some in Versace, like, I'm not buying. I didn't fucking come to Ghana to buy Versace.
I could buy that shit here. You know what I'm saying?
I buy shit at any point, right?
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
I'm coming here. I bought a couple pieces of art. I actually just took them to get framed. I bought three pieces of art. The kids were able to go out and experience and buy things and support them. And again, I've always been a proponent of small businesses, even when I'm here,
mm-hmm.
Mom and pop shop. So it felt really good to support them. So if you go, there's a like I said, Exhale is a great place. It's a great fucking location. There's a rooftop literally across the street from the airport, which had the best party, mind you, because that was a nigga party. Like, for real. like I met a nigga from Brooklyn in there. nigga said, what part? I said, he said, yo, where you from? I was like, Brooklyn. He said, what part? I pulled back like, nigga, you know me, like,
yeah, like, nigga, like, I know you, nigga.
We had some problems back in the day.
Exactly.
Nigga, you trying to settle a score over here,
exactly over here, the curl, the fuck.
Yeah. But yeah. Nah, we had a great time, man. Like, we had a great time, and it was. And I say this because I want people to understand, like, this is hospitality that's going to be second to none. Like, there was no cutting corners. There was mm-hmm. no. Oh, I can't get this. It was none of that shit, man. Your Wi-Fi is popping.
Yeah, you're good. You're good.
Your lobster tails is popping.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? Your champagne.
The Hennessy is right. You know what I'm saying?
Yes. The Henny is coming through.
Yeah.
All of your accoutrements.
Yeah, it's there.
Not like Cuba where you got to be like, let me take the toilet paper with me.
Okay. Yeah. Well.
Oh, well.
I'm still a nigga that I know how to travel, so I keep some toilet paper with me, nigga.
You keep a roll of Scott in the bag. It's the case.
Keep some wipes.
1,000 sheets. It's the case.
Keep some wipes in the Imodium.
Yeah. So for my break, I do the second annual Holiday in Harlem party. Holidays in Harlem party. I moved the location this year to the Cove. Now I came through. A lot of people came through. Actually doubled the crowd from last year. It was a good night, man. It was a good time. The weather was great that night. Everybody was drunk as shit. You know what I'm saying? High, yelling Earth, Wind & Fire songs at the top of their lungs. And we had a good time, man. We really enjoyed it. Got to see a lot of people. And then people told people who told people. So, like I said, it grew the crowd. But, it was a great crowd. There was no issues. Everybody just had a blast. There was no problems. It was fun. It was a good time, man. And then after that, I just chilled for the rest of the break.
I didn't do a whole lot of nothing, actually. Yeah. I've been on, like, I started organizing my bedroom and my closets, like, late summer because I got a spin bike and I had to make some room for it. But that spilled over into, like, reorganizing my entire house. And I've lived in my apartment almost 9 years, so this is a lot of stuff.
So you got rid of a lot?
Well, I tried to. I basically like kind of went through everything I owned for the first time in a minute. I got rid of a good bit of stuff. But the problem was I was also bringing stuff in. Because I kept saying, how do I keep donating stuff and taking stuff out? And I still got so much shit. And I realized it's because things kept coming in the house. Like you know, I get a new chair and I take the chair out. I get a new whatever and that, you know, that type of thing.
Yeah.
So I had to really like pare some stuff down. It's still a process, but like that was what I did over most of the break, like sorting through my closet, sorting through drawers, changing out shelves, rearranging stuff, ordering stuff, getting rid of stuff. Like, and that made me happy. Like that plus binge watching multiple TV shows. I didn't leave my house Christmas Day, the day after Christmas. I didn't leave my house New Year's Eve. I was chilling. Like I was very comfortable.
Oh, sidebar, peace to whoever. Somebody stole my vape pen at the party. I gave it to somebody. I can't remember who. They never gave it back. And then peace to Rabia, who bought me some weed brownies, which I probably, and I gave them to somebody to hold, and I ain't never seen them. So niggas done took my shit.
That's your fault, though, for just passing shit over.
It really is. It really is. I'll take the onus for
people
it.
People who aren't your girl, because your girl is there. Your girl is supposed to be the designated hold my stuff person.
She got there late, though. So when they gave me the brownies, she wasn't there yet. I wasn't going to eat the brownies anyway, because I don't like that type of high, that long high. I don't like to be high for, like, 8 hours. I don't like that. So I didn't mind kind of somebody stolen, but I just wish the nigga who the chick who I gave him to would have just said thank you.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Shit, because yeah, I know they had a good-ass holiday. So just real quick on a movie tip, I saw Uncut Gems.
Which I was going to go see Christmas and didn't.
It's excellent. It's really, really good. Like, it's really, it's very, like...
I've heard it's great.
Yeah, it's intense and, like,
very... anxiety-inducing.
Yeah, exactly, because it's very intense, like, right from the door. Like, Adam Sandler's character is, no spoilers, but he's this guy who works down in the Diamond District. And he's... You know, hustling and moving around like those. Anybody who from New York knows the Diamond District is totally a world unto itself. Like that. I'm amazed. The guys who directed the film are these two Jewish cats and the Safi brothers. And I think that they said their father used to work in the Diamond District. Mm-hmm. And obviously Adam Sandler is a Jewish superstar. I'm assuming that's the only way they even had to get access to get in there, because the Diamond District ain't fucking around with that, putting cameras in there and all that. But
They do on the low, bro.
Do they? They let you film a little something?
Yeah, man. Like, dude, like, it's if you watch some of these shows.
Law and Order, for sure.
No, I'm talking about, like, fucking reality shows.
Oh.
Like, they be,
yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, remember, that drives a lot of their business.
True.
So yes. So the rappers coming through, the athletes coming through.
Trying to watch and
the people living at 720 Park Avenue coming through.
Yeah.
That's all great. Okay, but you know who keeps lights on? Okay, the guy that worked 4 to 12.
Yeah.
That's coming
to
spend
his buy an engagement ring for his
buy his $5,000 engagement ring.
On layaway.
We'll put some on it. Okay.
I'll be back next Tuesday.
That's who keep the lights on.
Yeah. So it was really good. Kevin Garnett's in the movie. He was good. But Adam Sandler to me was like Oscar worthy good. Like he was fucking excellent. I'm not gonna tell much about the movie because it has a lot of twists and turns, but it was really good. I highly recommend it. I highly recommend that movie. And then on Netflix I watched on YouTube, I went into a deep dive. So what's happening in England is there's a movie called Blue Story. It's written by this guy called Rap Man. Rap Man, he's actually a rapper. He's just like, maybe he's 30. He's a pretty young guy. He's actually managed by Roc Nation now. And he was doing these little YouTube films. The Blue Story on YouTube, they turned into a full-length movie. But he's done like two or three of them. And he's like, he's really good. Like these are like, he's got another one called Shiro's Story, which is a three-parter. And they're really well acted, and he's really clever in the way he puts the music in. He's got, like, the characters rapping, but it makes sense. Like, so in England, that's kind of like what they're doing. Now, they're doing a huge deep dive into, like, filming kind of short films on various things that's happened around the London hoods. And they're all over YouTube. But they got, like, they're high quality. They're really well done. So I kind of did a deep dive on that. So if you got any time, you should kind of check it out because there's some really, really good ones on there. I suggest Shiro's Story should be your first one.
Okay.
It's really, really good. Like with crazy twists and turns, like, oh shit. It's fucking excellent. Like it's amazing. So I did that. And then I watched some of You on
But now, did you watch season one, or did you just try?
I started on season one, but I'm only on like episode 6 or 7 of season one. So
I'm way behind.
So don't, no spoilers. But from what I saw, it's great.
So I think. So I actually think. So here's what's interesting about you. So season one.
Well, let's give a little backstory on you. So you was just.
Okay. So you originally was a Lifetime series. It flopped.
Oh, I didn't know that.
See, this is why you need to let me talk. You originally was a Lifetime series. It completely flopped.
You start right up around the new year.
And then, and then Netflix picked it up, and it got a little cult following. So, like, I watched you the first season when it came out, which I want to say was, like, summer? It might have even been. It wasn't that long ago. I don't even think it was top of year. I don't know when it came out on Lifetime, but it hit Netflix. Like, I definitely watched it, like, summer, I want to say.
No, on Lifetime, is it the same actors? Was it different?
Literally, it's exactly what you're watching now on Lifetime.
Oh wow! Okay.
And it flopped on Lifetime, and then Netflix aired it, wow. And then it caught a lick on Netflix.
Caught a wave,
because it's bingeable, right? Like if I had to tune into it every week, I wouldn't watch it. And there's even parts in season one where, like in the third act, it almost lost me a couple of times, but because I was binging, I kept going.
Mm-hmm.
When I realized there was going to be a season two, because there's a cliffhanger at the end of season one, you realize there's going to be a season two. I was like, we don't need a season two of this shit. How is this possibly going to happen again? Season two was really well done. I think it's actually a tighter story.
So you like two better than one?
I like two better than one. One to me felt, two is, it's all extra cheesy drama-y. One to me was really silly in some places, but I think it was supposed to be like, it's not supposed to be deep, right?
Mm-hmm.
Two, I think, was just better written, and it was, the characters are stronger. But the thing that's amazing about you is that, and even Pim Badgley, who plays the lead character, Joe, has said this. Mm-hmm. The thing about you is that it is a... It's a series that shows us how fine the line is between what we've been taught through books and movies is romantic,
mm-hmm,
and actual like infringement on personal space all the way up to straight crazy stalker,
mm-hmm,
bullshit, right? And how much of the stuff that we think of as like, oh, this is just romantic, they just love me, is actually like, no, this is actually unhealthy.
Yeah.
And the great thing, and then also Penn has said, and you see this more in season two, is like how far people will go to overlook the transgressions of like a attractive and charismatic white man.
Yeah. I saw that interview when he said
like
that.
On some Ted Bundy shit, right? Mm-hmm, like, mm-hmm. Cause the protagonist, Joe, he's intelligent. You know, he's a reader. He's a writer. He works in a bookstore.
And he's non-threatening. Like
he seems non-threatening.
He projects non-threatening. Anyway.
Right. And the amazing thing is that because of the way the story is narrated by him, like where you're inside his head for real, there are times when you don't even really know who to root for. Like you're low-key kind of rooting for him. And then you remember, mm-hmm, that like, oh wait, you're the bad guy.
This motherfucker's crazy. Yeah.
Right. Right. Yeah. So it's an interesting twist. But I saw way more people, maybe because this one dropped the day after Christmas, way more people engaging in season two than I saw in season one. Like I never saw memes for season one. I never saw jokes for season one. So it's kind of like with Bird Box, like when you drop it at the right time.
Yeah. And you catch that wave.
Everybody's home and engaged.
Everybody's at the crib. Exactly. So they just start to watch and then it becomes a thing. Yeah. So again, so I'm going to get to season two, but I it is a very interesting, I didn't know what it was really even about. I just saw people tweeting about it. I was like, oh, I was at the crib. I was like, let me just check this shit out. I had no idea what it was even about.
Right.
And I was like, oh, this is very interesting. You know what I'm saying? Like you said, and you do, you do get into those spaces where he does like some good things, like in season one, like with the little kid and stuff. Yeah. And you're like, oh, he's a fucking nice guy. And then sometimes, and he does other things. I don't want to give spoilers away.
He's like,
this dude is bonkers. You know what I'm saying? Like, so it's a very interesting, and I'm glad that Penn let it be known that's how they were going into it thinking. It's kind of similar to Gone Girl.
Yeah.
Where it's like this attractive white woman gets away with the craziest shit, but because she's an attractive white woman, it's like, oh, she's just sweet. She's a victim.
But she's psychotic.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So I watched that. And I watched, did you, Kevin Hart. Let's get into that.
I started it and I'm bored with it all. I started it because we were going to tape. I'm on episode 2. I'm bored already. I can't.
Bro, did you watch the whole thing?
Yes, I did.
Okay, so go on. I'll let you go and take the lead on it because I know you have some thoughts and comments.
So Kevin Hart has decided to do basically a reality show. It's called the document. It's basically a six-part documentary called "Don't Fuck This Up," which basically follows him over the course of maybe about a year, like a calendar, like a legit calendar year.
Yeah, yeah.
From when he was offered the Oscars job, that's kind of the starting point, and it kind of ends maybe right after he did this last tour and put out Night School.
Yes, yes, yes.
So, listen, it's an easy watch. It's not very difficult. I have some really funny feelings when I watch this because Kevin is wildly narcissistic.
Wow. Like, oh my God, that's like, so narcissistic.
Like it is. It's really like his lack of self-awareness, his lack of, but it's like, cause there are narcissistic people who are very clear that they are.
Yeah.
Right. And they can at least at minimum acknowledge that. Mm-hmm. Like he seems to be in such a bubble, in such an insulated bubble that he doesn't even recognize that. I don't think Kevin is a bad guy, if that makes sense, right? Like, while I do think he's a narcissist, I don't think he's a bad guy. I don't think his heart is cold. I think he unaware. Likes, what'd you say?
I say he's just unaware.
Yes. But when I hear a grown man, and I mean an all the way grown man, talk about how he wouldn't have cheated if his boys were around.
Yeah. I ain't have a cool with me.
Like, is that what we doing, my nigga? Like, we, and then they, and mind you, because I looked this up. So, you know, during this whole thing that transpired with Kevin Hart and the woman in Vegas, there was apparently, and I'm using air quotes here, there was an extortion attempt reported by one of the guys that was in his crew or whatever the case may be. Yep. Mind you, from what I've read, all of that shit has been thrown out.
Yeah.
And again, it's just like this, it's always somebody to blame when he doesn't meet the mark of what is acceptable and what is just normal good behavior. Mm-hmm. But he always wants all of the credit.
And he doesn't listen to anybody. So it's like, how are you, like this much I saw already. Episode 1 starts with him literally arguing with his publicist. The person whose job it is to manage your public image is you are in the middle of a image crisis, literally. Mm-hmm. You have a major movie coming out. Your co-star is pulling out of interviews with you. Your well-respected, award-winning co-star is pulling out of interviews with you.
And at that time, I think they're still trying to save the Oscars thing. They haven't cut him off yet, right?
No, but he was. But his movie was coming out. The movie he was doing,
the one with Bryan Cranston,
which was supposed to be Kevin's first like serious. It was supposed to be his foray into drama, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is always like a big turning point for a comedian, and that's what he fucked that up. But his publicist is literally all she's telling him to do. Like she's not even telling him to rehash the whole thing. She's telling him to have a conversation with Ellen about it. And then for every other interview, say, I discussed it on Ellen. And he's basically telling her, I'm not even going to do that. Like, I'm just going to pivot. And Kevin is full of non-apologies. And this is what niggas don't understand about the Kevin thing. People be like, he apologized. No, he didn't. Like, Kevin keeps saying, I said what was wrong and what was right. And it was old. And it's like, it's very, why you keep bringing up old shit? Literally, the energy you put into doing that, you could just be like, yeah, it was fucked up, I know, and I'm like, that's all you gotta say, nigga. Like, it's not hard. And Kevin seems to think that his work ethic Like, yeah, you work from sunup to past sundown, and that's great, and you're never home, and you're hustling, and you want your family to be good. But none of that shit has anything to do with your ability to actually just take responsibility and accountability.
And I want to say something. And I want to say something about that too, because I often see people use that as a sort of justification for being an absentee parent. And let me explain what I mean.
Yeah, I was going to get into that.
Like, I don't mean that he is a deadbeat. I don't mean that he doesn't love his kids. I think he will, you know, fight a lion with a butter knife for his family. But I think that Kevin loves the spotlight. Yeah. And again,
Kevin loves being Kevin.
Yes. And not being self-aware and him being so unaware of that, right? Like, it's just not allowing him to recognize that, dude, like this has nothing to do. Like, your kids aren't going hungry, my nigga. Like, yeah. Stop.
I don't want to be broke again, my nigga. Yeah. You're not going to be broke again.
Like stop. Okay. Yeah. Like let's gain some perspective here. And I completely understand that you want to have a certain quality of life and you got a short, you know, window to get all of the bags you possibly can. And no one is telling you to turn down some ridiculous offer. Right. But we are also not going to sit here and make it seem like you can't figure out a way to make time. You are one of the few box office draws that actually has some level of power. Mm-hmm. You can, you know, they can shift the fucking shoot schedule.
Yeah.
For a couple of days because you need to get to a recital, my nigga. They can go around you, okay? And that's where I just feel like he's saying that to because that's what he's supposed to say.
Yeah.
Right? And again, I think that fatherhood, especially being in the trenches and being with the kids, like that shit is real, my nigga. Like,
yeah.
Like, I get it. You know, you took him for a Saturday, and I'm not shitting on him, and I'm not saying this is his thing, but I'm like, I see guys do that where it's like, you know, I took him out. We went to the mall. We went Saturday. It's like, yeah, nigga, but
what about Tuesday afternoon?
What about Tuesday afternoon? Like they need help with their homework,
yeah,
or
yeah.
they just kind of want to vent to you about their day.
Yeah, and ain't all, but it's all just not like fun shit.
That's exactly.
You know,
and so. He has a phenomenal work ethic, which I wanted to point out. I thought it was very interesting that his mom had instilled that work ethic in him without even, I mean, I think she realized it, but I don't think he realized it.
Yeah, because she said she lost her brother to the streets.
Well, mostly too, because I'm a fan of no idle time.
Yeah,
the smallest amount of idle time you can give a kid is the best. You know, you don't have to overbook them, but there should be some level of structure, mm-hmm. and you can see that. And listen, it's served him well. You know, he has honed his craft. Kevin has gotten better. You don't have to like his comedy. You can objectively look at every.
He's grown.
Comedy special that Kevin has done, and he has gotten better. He has honed his craft. He knows what works. He knows his shtick. He gets all of that shit, right? And I respect that. Mm-hmm. But when I watch him go down this path, and he seems, you know, when you watch the show, man, it's like a guy that's spiraling. He's spiraling, and he doesn't know how to grab himself out of it. And so what does he do? Instead of dealing with the shit head on and dealing with the homophobic or the toxic sort of comments that were made, right? He takes an executive and puts her in the fucking hot seat to basically give the world I have black friends speech.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And she's put in this really awkward ass position because she doesn't seem natural. She doesn't even seem like she really knows him.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? She basically says as much. You know what I mean? And so it's just weird. It's kind of awkward. The whole shit with him and the trainer had gotten really awkward. Yeah,
that was weird. That was really weird.
And it was just like...
Because I saw so many people on Instagram and, you know, on social media, I should just say. Me and Gip from City Mile, we're buddies. And so he had made a post about it, and we kind of started... people started kind of going back and forth in the comments about it, and dudes like, no, this is the way dudes talk to each other, man. And you know, he bought his boy's car, so they all good. I'm like, well, first of all, if you and your boys is talking to each other to like that, you kind of need to reassess your relationship. Now, I'm not saying, like, you know, testosterone don't fly sometimes and niggas will talk a little shit, but that wasn't talking a little shit. That was like some real, like, you're fuck you, nigga, you whack, I'm dope. Like, you a clown-ass nigga. That shit was sitting in his chest for a minute. Yeah. And I don't know what it is based on, really, but I don't even feel like that was based on the fact that the trainer didn't, quote-unquote, have a house. It was based on something else, and he used that as a way to kind of get at the dude, because it was like, and then, like I said, to the narcissism part, it was like, dude, this trainer's like at least 6'2", maybe 6'3". In shape like a motherfucker. Like, you really thought you was gonna fight this guy and give him and get a fair and be able to square up? But again, like, that
massive Napoleon complex, like,
yes, it's like exactly. But it was just the way he did that, and it was just, it kind of showed. And I don't believe that he hasn't flashed out like that on, you know, a couple of them other guys too.
Oh, I definitely think he does that from time to time, like. I don't know if dude had kind of given him the cosign or permission to say, hey, you can say that I was like fucking sleeping in my car. But like, I would never say that about anyone.
Yeah. You knew it or not. Like, they ain't understand. Especially now.
I would feel wildly uncomfortable with saying, yeah, you know, he was homeless and I didn't want him to be homeless.
Yeah.
So I looked out for him.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, I gave him a job.
And listen, I do think that in Hollywood in particular, and in Black Hollywood, those acts of kindness, that they are important. They are, you know, we would always, there's the famous story of Pat Morita talking about, you know, Red Fox, you know, giving him $3,500.
He was fucked up.
He was like, yeah, I want to buy this house. I can't, you know. Like, that was not an uncommon thing. You would hear those stories all the time about artists, especially Black artists like that. If you were coming up, you were struggling. You know what I'm saying? So for him to have loaned Tiffany Haddish money or to look out for his peoples like that, like, I think that that's cool and I think that that's honorable. But I think that, you know, there should also be some level of
discretion.
It's still a man, right?
Yeah, like
you know, I hope
like you're doing it to announce it.
Yeah, you know, it just rubs me the wrong way, because that's just not my bag. But there's some people, you know. Look, man, if I was in that position, I'd probably be as grateful as they are, and I'm not saying that they're not. But the show, all in all, these shows are also very difficult to sort of follow, because, you know, ultimately you're watching an actor, right?
Yeah.
So you really don't, you know, it's kind of hard to distinguish real and fake and staged and, you know, but I'm looking at the, you know, I'm watching the episode of What Happens in Vegas, which is where he, you know, they address the thing with him cheating. And I'm like, your wife had to live that shit in real time.
Yeah.
And then you sat her down and put a camera in her face.
Yeah.
And made her relive that shit again.
Yeah. To be judged now, because people are going to watch it and judge her.
You know, it's of course they're judging.
Yeah.
Like, of course
they are. Why'd you stay? And
and you know, look, she's a grown woman. I'm not taking control away from her. I don't think Kevin, you know, raised his fist up to make her go and sit down and do this interview. I think they probably saw this as a family project. But you know, look, man, I think all in all, I don't think Kevin is a bad person.
No,
I think Kevin has, issues with listening. I think he has issues with having, respect for people's positions and their knowledge and having a level of deferment. Okay. Like, I'm not going to, like, if there's a marketing plan on the table, I'm kind of going to defer to Naima here, right? Like, you know what I'm saying? If there's a security question, then you guys are probably going to defer to me. I just don't think he has, I don't think he has an understanding of how symbiotic relationships work. I think he likes being the head.
The top guy.
The top guy, because there's something very honorable about that. And there's something that there's an air of control. There's an air of respect that comes with that position. Like, I would never, you know, look, and again, I'm not spending his money. You know, do with it as you wish. But like, nigga, I gotta send my kid to college, nigga. I don't need a 67 Corvette.
Yeah, exactly, nigga.
What the fuck I'm gonna do with a 67 Corvette? Yeah, you know what the insurance? No, the insurance on one of them.
And there's a maintenance.
Yeah, I'm just
you can't
just
take that to the Jiffy Lube. Shit, yeah, you know what I mean?
I was like, this nigga just went out and really dropped the cool mill.
Yeah.
Because there was about 9 cars out
and
there.
And they were all like, and they were all pristine. They
pristine.
Were, yeah. So, he didn't get the shit off the junkyard, yeah.
Yeah, God bless. I mean, I'll watch again at some point. But again, I don't think Kevin's a bad guy.
He's just kind of caught up in that, in Hollywood world, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like, maybe watching this will make him kind of look at things.
Well, I don't think it's even Hollywood. Like, I think if Kevin was the assistant manager at the McDonald's,
he'd be the same nigga.
He'd be the asshole fucking with the nigga on fries.
Yeah.
That's who he is.
Like, I told you to salt the fries this way. And here's the thing. Kevin's brand, being the hardest working dude in show business, is becoming Kevin's brand, right?
Yeah.
So he cannot let that go. Like, now he can't let it go. It's like, how many more things can I add to this shit? I gotta do more. And I think, like you guys say, you're not gonna go broke. Like, at this point, Kevin would have to actively work against his self-interest to go broke.
Yeah.
But I think to him, there is a real fear of becoming stagnant. The one thing I think Kevin realizes, and even his trainer says this, here's the thing. Kevin is talented, but his creativity and his originality has been less of his success story of late than just his hustle.
It's just working,
and he's trying to beat a clock.
Yeah.
I think we've all said that about him for years, and he says that about himself. Kevin is trying to beat a clock. I don't think Kevin expects to still be on stage at 60 or doing a series like Red Fox or something like that. I think Kevin feels like he's got
I'm glad. I don't mean to cut you off, but I'm glad you said that, because he actually mentions that.
Okay.
When he and Dave. Chappelle.
Oh yeah, Emma Chappelle.
He's like, yo, like, when does this sort of stop?
And Dave, when does it end?
Dave was basically like, this part,
nigga,
like,
what you mean?
The stand-up shit doesn't
never stops.
He said, we, you know, he said something that was really, I don't want to say important. That's a bit overstatement, but it was something that really caught me. Was he said, we're the reverse of fighters. We get better with age.
Our timing gets better.
Right.
Our skills sharpen as we get older.
You gotta keep working it out. You gotta keep
Yes. Which is why, you know, that's one of the things about that whole comedy fraternity, and that's why we always make the joke that they must have had a meeting when they had the political correctness conversation, because
they all put the same shit in their shit.
Yes, but they all go work out.
Yeah, even show Kevin, like, that was that was one part that I did like. Kind of he I guess went to the Comedy Cellar while he was in New York, and he was just kind of like, I don't even know what I'm saying up here. I'm just
you gotta
up.
Go
like,
work. Yeah, you gotta.
Yeah, he was totally in his element. And Chris Rock came. They had dinner. It was Chris Rock, a couple of guys. And he was totally in his element. Like, it was a small table. It was just some dudes joking. It was no bodyguard. It was nobody around. And he was like, he was super comfortable. Like, he was like, yeah, I'm back. And he said, I miss New York. I miss this. Right.
I think that's the problem. I think Kevin has gotten away from the core of his comedy, right? Because he's become such a big star. So now it's like, I got a podcast, I got a Nike deal, I got a media company, and I'm running, and I got a TV show, and I got a blah, 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 blah. But the core of it all is the stage, right? It's the stand-up. And I feel like
it's jack of all.
Yeah.
It's like
jack of all things, master of none. He's
exactly.
And it's like, And you forget, and I think this happened to Eddie, and that's why it's taking Eddie so long to come back, because right now Eddie's working out, you know? So it's like, you become such a big star. It's almost like a gift and a curse. I think that's why, you know, it's why Dave stepped away. Like, you got to go back to doing fucking
1,500. Yo, but those things, but those, that's what Eddie says in Comedians and Cars Getting Coffee when he's with Seinfeld. Right. He talks about that sort of stuff. And last thing I want to say is, I do want him to, you know, to hear someone say, I'm not impacted or I'm not affected.
Oh, yeah.
I've gotten over something as traumatic as some of the things he had gone through with his dad.
And his mom,
mm-hmm. right? But I think his mom
I'm saying the way his mom passed, like, yes. early. But, and remember, he said that there was one time his eyes glassed over when he said she never got to see me do a show.
Yeah,
and he was really like,
yeah, that hit him hard.
I think I think it's okay for things to have impact on you, right? Yeah. Like, I think it's okay to acknowledge that your fucking dad, who was out here getting high 100 miles a minute.
Yeah.
And literally stealing from you guys. Like, I think it's okay to acknowledge that might have impacted you, right? Yeah. Like, I think your dad throwing you in the fucking end of the deep end of the pool.
You can't swim.
Telling you to just figure it out.
Yeah.
Is probably going to impact you.
Yeah.
But again, that there's something in him that will not allow there to be any speck of what he would consider to be weak. And I think that is based on being around his dad, right?
He said his dad would always say, don't be a bitch.
Don't be a bitch. That's my point, right? Like, so when you tell me something doesn't impact you, and yet you go into a 15-minute story of some of the most embarrassing traumatic experiences that you've ever heard.
Yeah.
Like, don't tell me
that
didn't impact you, motherfucker. Yeah. You remember what color shoes he had on it when you was 12.
Yeah, you remember all the details, so it really bothered you. Yeah, so I mean, yeah, it was interesting. Other thing I found interesting is, I mean, I guess maybe it was the luck of the draw, but in that year's time that all these things happened.
He had a real
he had a crazy year, and I know obviously it wasn't planned, like for him to get caught cheating and for him to lose the Oscars and for his father to get, you know, kind of really sick and you know, to have a baby. Like, it all happened kind of in this compacted, you know, 12 to whatever 14 months of time, and the cameras just happened to be rolling, you know. Now, have you been watching Love and Hip Hop New York?
I watched the first two episodes. I have not watched the last two because, you know, holiday weeks, you forget what.
Yeah,
you fall off with regular programming. And you
we know what day it is.
But I will say, Peace to Monami Entertainment, the first two episodes, the whole, like, Chrissy's back, that whole spin was the funniest shit. Like, I was laughing through half of that. Shit, like, it was just so dramatic, and Christine is just out here, like, with the promo and the post and the this and the whatever. But I'm gonna catch up. I have been keeping up almost. I'm one episode behind. I have been keeping up with RHOA. I'm one episode behind.
Okay, so what are you thinking so far?
I think Kenya is still a horrible person. But I think Mark is also a horrible person.
Mark is an awful dude, bro.
Like, he reminds me of this director's day. Like, he's so fucking arrogant. He does not like her.
At all.
No, nah. He it's beyond like not liking. Like, I can, oh like, that nigga, that, I wouldn't drink nothing that nigga gave me.
He doesn't respect her. You can tell he thinks she's silly.
He be putting Shug Avery P in that nigga.
Exactly. But you know what I peeped, and, you know, correct me, you know, nah, I guess from the female standpoint, if you think I'm going on track. In the last episode he was in, and that was the one where he came
when
down.
They all went to lunch?
They went to dinner and dinner, lunch, whatever that was. What I don't disagree that he doesn't like her. I don't disagree with that at all. But when I watched that episode, what popped out at me was
she threw a shot first.
No, and then she actually makes him insecure because because anything that she has with nice car, house, her business, he shits on it because it's like she did it without him.
I didn't read it that way. And I mean,
he was trying to tell her about the Tesla, and he's like, "Nah, whatever." But she's like, "He's why you, with the house." She's like, "Yeah, but it's my house. It's my house paid for. Right. Like, why are you coming to me about that?" I feel like he's a bit insecure because she doesn't actually need him financially for anything, and so I think he feels like he gotta put her in her place by saying whatever she does is whack.
I do think there's a little bit of let me put you in your place, but I think it's because he thinks, the way I read it was that he thinks that the stuff that Cynthia thinks is important is trivial. So like when she was talking about the Tesla, what he was really whatever about was the fact that she was like, I summoned the car to come get me, and he was like, you summoned the car to come what? You know what I mean? Like, it was just kind of like, it felt like, and I don't know what, also, you know when you get to a point where you're annoyed with a person, any fucking thing they say is annoying. And he's clearly already at the point where, like, anything this bitch says is annoying.
It's annoying. But my thing is, maybe this is pie in the sky.
Go ahead. But when we got to dinner, I think what happened was she started putting him on blast publicly first, saying that he wasn't romantic. I told Mike he needs to give you some lessons because...
His proposal and shit was trash.
Yeah, tell him that he proposed to me. And then saying that, like, winning, marrying him was, like, her second, you know, most special day after winning Miss Universe. You kind of saw his face like, really, bitch? You know what I mean? So I think this is a sparring that they do. And I also think that, you know, Kenya cannot let herself feel trumped in public. So I'm guessing that they probably have a little bit of tit for tat that happens in public often, but this is also something that happens when you get to be a certain age before you get married. Like, you have your own shit. And I think that she is realizing that, like, she's probably talking more about her own shit. Like, you know, she went to the lawyer to make sure that her daughter is, you know, taken care of with her assets and stuff. Because King is 50. And I think she's realizing, like, her and Mark are not, well, obviously they've already filed for divorce, but even at the time of filming, she's realizing this marriage is not gonna last. Let me make sure my daughter is good because this nigga got two other kids.
Yeah, even the point about the whole prenup thing, and he's like, well, I told her she could take everything, I'll just start again. But her thing was like, I don't want your shit. I'm just protecting my shit from you. And I think that's what hurt him. He's like, she's like, I don't want, you ain't got nothing that I want, bro. I'm good. Right. I'm protecting me from you.
Right.
I really feel like a lot, again, I'm not disagreeing about him hating her, but I think it's because, go ahead, bro, what do you think?
I think both them niggas are just unbearable. They're just unbearable people. Like, I mean that in the most sincerest way. What we're watching are two peas of a pod. Okay.
I think
what's happening is they're bumping heads because no one has give. No one has give. And in this sort of dynamic, right, what are you willing to give on?
Mm-hmm.
What? It could be small. I'm not saying it needs to be some massive give, right? But what are you willing to give on? And she, like, to me, for your husband to be out here talking about, well, you know, Nene is cool
with me, yeah.
It's like, nigga, what?
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? Like who says
that?
Yeah,
that was wild disrespectful. That was wild disrespectful.
But that to me is somebody who's looking to dig. He knows that that's gonna fuck with
that's
her.
Gonna hurt
he knows
her.
That's gonna rub her. Same way with her, with what you said. You know him. Oh, I'll start over, but I don't want your shit. You know what I'm saying? I just think that this was a bad experiment that two grown people should have known better about. It's really all this was.
Okay. Yeah, it's ugly, man. And then the rumor has been that Nene, because she attacked that cameraman last season, was suspended for 3 episodes, but they didn't publicly say that. But she wasn't in the first 3 episodes of this season. So she's come back now. And then kind of I don't know, I won't call it a bit part, but definitely not kind of driving the boat like she's done in the past.
She's not, but she's also trying to play it off like it's by choice. Like she's on some all, I have a life coach. First she said she had a spiritual coach. Now it's a life coach. And, you know, I'm trying to stay low. And I'm trying. But NeNe is the same. Like, this bitch still, she also still cannot take accountability. As soon as you try to get NeNe to take accountability for anything, she shuts down. Like, NeNe needs so much, NeNe needs so much intensive therapy.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if it's just, like, her biological dad not being around or whatever she has
going on. Her mom or whatever,
her capacity for actual, like, emotion and empathy is, it's like her lack of capacity. It's shocking. Like it's actually shocking.
And I wonder. I wonder how things is with Greg for real right now.
Who knows? But she's still making shit about her. Still.
All the time.
It's still very much like I can't.
Like she had the cancer, not him.
Right. Still. Like she's a victim because everybody. She's still centering herself and complaining that people were upset with her for centering herself. Like it's amazing.
Yeah.
And I just. But. Hey, but you know, even now with all these different episodes, like apparently she was only in the last couple of minutes of this last episode.
Yes, she was.
But she made a point to tweet about, like, yes, honey, they had to put me in the teaser, but it was just a tease. I was only in the last 10 minutes and peeped that. So it's like, you really can't stand it not being about. She cannot stand it.
She can't stand this show is still moving down the tracks.
Right.
And she's not driving the boat anymore. So, I mean, but. We're going to keep watching. And then sidebar, the Married to Medicine did their reunion special. They had two episodes back-to-back a couple weeks ago. And then they had a third episode this week past. Wasn't anything too dramatic. You know, I almost felt like there was going to be a Mariah quad semi makeup at the end, but it didn't happen. But, you know, Heavenly and Simone got into it, but then they kissed and made up. Jackie and Simone were into it, but they kissed and made up. So the cast stays intact, and, you know, they'll be up. I'm assuming they'll all be back, you know, next season, whenever that is. But I enjoyed it. And let's talk about, hold on.
Let's talk about Hopelessly in Love.
Hopelessly in Love. So Hopelessly in Love is a series on Lifetime. Lifetime is kicking ass on the black programming, by the way. They're kicking some ass. They did the Surviving R. Kelly 2. They did this series, which we're going to talk about. The Clark Sisters movie coming out, which they had they put a trailer out for.
Just coming out this Sunday.
Yeah, it was the trailer looked fucking awesome. I guess I shouldn't curse around the
Clark Sisters. It's I watched it.
It's awesome.
It's an amazing movie.
Yeah, because the trailer was like, it looks like they're keeping it pretty gully about what was popping. They're not sugarcoating. So that was awesome. And they have a Salt and Pepper movie coming out. I saw that trailer too. That trailer was very lightweight though. They didn't show any kind of any stuff. Yeah. I think it just came out not even a week ago. But it was very light. It was just like them performing. They didn't show any kind of like scenes of, you know, darkness, but so they're doing a great job with, and I'm sure they got other things they're working on too, but this show here, Hopelessly in Love, is a series. It's starting off with three episodes. The first episode is Andre Rison and Lisa Left Eye Lopez. The next episode is Faith and Biggie and Little Kim, their triangle. And then the third episode is, I forget old boy's name, who married Anna Nicole Smith.
Oh yes, Anna Nicole Smith and the old man.
Yeah, no, the young guy.
Oh, the younger guy, okay.
The young guy who had the baby, she had the baby for.
Okay.
I can't remember his name now. But anyway, so the first episode, I'm sure the old guy will be mentioned in there, though, because they get pretty in-depth. So this first episode, again, was Left Eye and Andre Rison, and they kind of did an arc on both of their lives. It's like a two-hour thing, so they go pretty deep. So it was like 2 hours. Yeah, it's long. So they talk about both of their lives, like growing up, Lisa in Philly, Andre up in Michigan. You know, became a pro, how they met, and how their worlds kind of collided. Well, not collided, but intersected, and their relationship arc, and then, you know, their breaking up, and then Lisa, you know, tragically passing away, and Andre kind of dealing with that fact. They let off some stuff. I had no idea that Left Eye was dated Tupac.
I had to order North Shug.
I knew about the Shug thing. I did know about the Shug thing. I knew about the Shug thing, but I didn't know about the Pac thing at all. I was like, wait,
I guess because technically they never dating.
I don't believe that.
They were never sleeping. I believe that.
You believe they never had sex? You believe that?
Let me tell you why I believe it. Because a nigga is just like a nigga like Pac. Because remember, this is the 90s. It's just like a nigga like Pac. Because Suge said Pac told him the reason he didn't want to sleep with Left Eye is because he wanted to be with her for real. So his thought was like, if I fuck her, she basically turns into
every other chick. She's a trick,
so like, yeah. I got her on a pedestal. I know niggas like this. Like, I got this one on a pedestal. So until I'm ready to be with her, commit to her.
I'm not going to do that.
I'm not going to do that because it's going to fuck my relationship. I also know women, and he set that tone. So I believe that. But I also know those kind of relationships where you guys are so connected as people and you have such a great vibe that carries over as the friendship. You're almost worried that if you guys have sex, it'll fuck up
the friendship.
Because they're both in their 20s at this time. We remember, these aren't grown, mature, emotional adults. These are 20-year-olds.
Yeah, Lisa,
I've got it 25.
And Left Eye wasn't much older when she died. She was like 30.
She was definitely not that old when Pac.
No, Pac, right?
So
probably was like 24, 25.
Right? So if you think about it, like, this is how two 24-year-olds would think. Like, I'm so into you. Our connection is so deep.
We don't really be together,
so we can't sleep. I absolutely believe.
Pac probably sending her poems and shit. You know.
Yeah, if you had told me, like, two for real grown people were doing that, I would have been like, fuck out of here. But no, I believe it. So, but like, the thing is, I think what was interesting about this to me is I don't think I've ever heard Andre's point of view.
I don't think he's ever done an interview about it ever. I think he said that at the beginning of the show. I've never talked about this before publicly.
Yeah, I've never heard Andre. And I also, it's been so long, I actually forgot how long her and Andre were together. Like, if you had asked me how long we're left on Andre Rising together, I would have been like, oh, like 4 or 5 years. They were together off and on for a decade.
Yeah.
I definitely forgot about that.
Yeah.
And you know, it was, and I'll give Lifetime some credit. Like, you know, they talked to Suge from jail. Not that he's doing shit else.
Yeah, but
you know,
still,
her sister, her mom, his sister. Like, his, it was pretty. Yeah. Her best.
They got people who were there.
Yeah, it's very thorough.
Yeah, they got people who were there. And I saw some people online saying, "Why didn't talk to T-Boz and Chili?" But I think because that wasn't their story.
Right.
They weren't living in the house with them like that.
Right. And also, we got T-Boz and Chili's reaction through, you know, Behind the Music a long time ago. Like, I was saying that when they were talking about when Left Eye burnt the house down. Always in my head, I will hear T-Boz on Behind the Music saying, "Lisa done burned the house down," like when she was talking about it. So, you know, we know their point of view. This was about Lisa, you know?
Yeah, yeah. It was really, it's really well done. I'm really interested to see the Biggie Faith one, because they got Biggie, they got Faith, that's a little C's on there. I don't know if they got Little Kim, but again, they go in depth, so they're gonna have some people.
They definitely don't have Biggie.
No, I'm tripping.
You sound like when Matthew Knowles was talking about,
and Marvin Gaye and Prince was in the studio. Like
Otis Redding was a
my fault. No, yeah, my fault. Shit.
Teddy P was on drums that day.
Teddy P played the drums. Diana Ross on backgrounds. But they got Faith and they got Lil C's and don't show anybody they have.
I wonder if they got Charlie.
I wonder, because they, like I said, they. This one was dope. They went real deep. Like, they got heavy. Like I said, even again, not that Suge's doing anything, but it ain't like Suge's randomly doing a gang of interviews from jail either. So it's kind of like they had to, you know, they did their homework.
Also, like, Andre's sister is fucking hilarious. Like, Left Eye is dead, and she still don't fuck with that.
I don't fuck with her at all. She had mental problems. I'm just saying.
I thought.
Oh, and Andre's mom too, who's a great church lady.
That shit was a little refreshing to me.
No, I loved it because it was real.
Yeah, man. Because But you know what I also found very interesting is when you follow sort of the levels of dysfunction and how it explains a lot of the behavior.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of later on, you know, the alcohol, the you know, explosive dad, and you know, sort of this, you know, Andre being sort of the man in the house after his stepdad is killed, and, you know, the sister, I'm like, she's not really taking she's not taking a brother away, she's taking a father away,
exactly.
Like, she's taking like, and it's funny, man, because, you know, I've sort of watched, you know, people, you know, sort of get married or whatever, man. And I've watched women sort of strategically push other women out of their lives. Like,
absolutely.
You know, through plan, through whatever, right? Like, there's all, it almost like she, you know, she didn't want him to have anybody that she didn't approve of.
Right. Exactly.
And she and Lisa was never going to get that approved.
Never. Like,
never.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And I think it's a little dependent and a little and a little warped.
Yeah.
But I also think that, you know, it was very raw, it was very real. I just, you know, it's very crazy for me that his wife's
name is Lisa Lopez.
Yeah.
Fucking crazy.
Yeah.
But I thought the Pac stuff went on a little too long. I thought that they kind of bled.
And I felt like they
bled that out. But you know, that's par for the course, right? It kind of is what it is.
Right.
And I don't know. I'm tired of hearing motherfuckers with the Pac was my soulmate.
Yeah.
Like,
how many soulmates like this nigga have?
I feel like this is the fourth or fifth time.
Yeah.
It's like, and look, Pac was a dynamic personality.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He was a good looking dude. He had a
25. Like, how
he had every everything you, yeah, it's like, who's not the fucking soulmate here?
William, right. Exactly. Who just fucked the nigga a couple times and kept it pushing?
Right.
I think he probably was chilling because I think he understood. Like, my opinion is I think they probably didn't have sex because he felt like she's fucking crazy.
She's crazy.
Possibly.
I keep way too many guns around.
Yeah.
And I might wake up with a pistol in my face, like what the ghost did to Tyreek.
She would come to your house and not fucking
leave. And never leave. Even Shug said she came to the crib and she never left.
She didn't leave. Like, and that's the thing. I didn't want to say it on Twitter because I really do try not to use the word crazy when it comes to women anymore. I try to be more careful about it. But every, like, attachment issue left, I had it. And, like, The if you ever saw TLC's Behind the Music, she was almost joking by the time she talked about setting the shoes on fire, because that was her go-to. Like, I'm going to throw some shit in the tub, I'm going to set it on fire. And whoop, the tub is plexiglass or fiberglass or whatever the fuck. And now it's like, bitch, you burned the entire house down just because you wanted to set some shoes on fire.
Yeah, I think that they did well with not having Chili and T-Boz in, because I think it also gives a level of separation. Like,
yeah,
that wasn't her friend. Those weren't her friends like that. Right. Those weren't her girls like that.
T-Boz and Chili are friends, but Left Eye was always kind of outside.
She never seemed connected like that. The Suge shit really, you know, I get Andre's reaction with that one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course.
Because I felt like he conceded. Here's what it really was for me. I felt like he conceded Pac.
Right.
You're like, all right, I get that one.
I get it.
Yeah, but that
I get it, nigga. It's like your lady came home, she done gave Idris some pussy. You like, all right, nigga, don't let it happen no more.
Don't do it again, goddammit.
All right.
Yeah.
I felt like he kind of conceded with Pac. I mean, because he understood that there was also an artistic kindred spirit.
Yeah.
That he just wasn't able to provide for her in that way. And I felt like with the Suge shit really was like, nigga.
Yeah, really?
Well, Suge's a gangster. It's different when a gangster fucks your bitch, right? Like, you got to just kind of let that one go.
Like, and listen, for the record, Andre and them niggas was in the street.
Right. Yeah.
For real.
Yeah.
I don't want to say it, but the whole we don't know who shot at the house.
Bullshit. That's bullshit.
Nigga,
Flint.
We don't know who shot up the house.
Flint ain't that big. So y'all niggas know. Now
I'm
not begging you to say it on TV, but y'all niggas know.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Sidebar real quick. So I tried to sign Left Eye when she decided to go solo when I was at Jot. And peace to my man Ian Burke, who actually kinda bought TLC to L.A. Reid. He actually brought a lot of people to a lot of art, to a lot of labels. But anyway, he set up the meeting. So it was me, Ian, and Left Eye. We sat down, had like a couple hour meeting. I actually really liked her. Mm-hmm. But the powers that be a job thought I was fucking crazy. I'm like, no, dude, nothing you should do. But anyway, first thing that shocked me about her was like in person, she was like mad pretty. And I was like, holy shit, she's beautiful. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. I just kind of, because you know, she always wore that stuff and the big clothes, you kind of didn't think of her in that way, but just sitting in that room, I was just like, oh shit.
Her family is, her gorgeous. Sister, her mom.
Yeah. I was like, wow, she's gorgeous. And she was, not surprisingly, like extremely artistic and had a very clear, once I kind of had to crack the ice a bit. Ian setting up the meeting and giving me the cosign helped a lot because she was really close with Ian. But then once I got talking, she really had a clear vision of like herself as an artist and what she wanted to do. And she was really smart, man. And I was like really excited. I was like, shit, I want to do this. And the people at Jive was like, what? Man. How would you do that?
I think I have a album somewhere because her album was finished when she died.
Yeah.
I think I have a copy of it somewhere. I gotta look for that. But it was she was definitely on some other shit.
No, she was on some other shit. But I enjoyed our meeting. I really did. I had a good time. But that's it, man. I think we're gonna wrap up on that note for the first show back.
I got a shout out.
You got a shout out to somebody?
I might be lying.
I got a quick shout out.
Go ahead.
Shout out to the officer that pulled me over.
Oh shit.
On the bullshit speeding ticket, but it was my registration. My registration had expired like over the holiday. Like,
come on, bro.
12/19. Like, yeah, I'm really paying attention to my fucking registration a week before Christmas, guys.
Nigga, I was in the mall, nigga, and you probably was too.
But peace to him for not towing me, because I, you know, technically they could have just took my car.
Took your shit. Yeah.
But recognizing. It definitely gave me a ticket. but again, it could have been far worse. You realize I was only a couple miles away from, I was literally up the street.
Okay.
I couldn't have been more than about 3 or 4 miles away from home.
Okay.
So, you know, he used his judgment. He didn't make a stink about it. It wasn't a big to do. Like that, it was the fastest pullover I've ever had in my life.
Okay.
I couldn't have been sitting there more than about 6 minutes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I mean, we was in and out. So, right, cool. Peace to him. I'm definitely fighting that speeding ticket, though. I can't be getting them points, my nigga.
Hell no. Fucking up the insurance.
Yeah. So, you know we'll have to figure that out.
Yeah. All right. Now, you remember your shout out?
Whatever.
All right, cool. So, we're going to wrap it up. We're back. 2020. Peace to the soldiers, because this is crazy. They say about to launch a second wave of missiles. Like, shit is super real right now. And sidebar, my man just texted me, said that Iran threatened that if the U.S. retaliates, they might go after Dubai.
No, that's what I just said. They said they're going to hit Dubai.
Yeah, so shit is getting crazy, yo. So yeah. Your man done really... Oh my God! Anyway, so I'm about to go watch The Honeymooners and sit and get off this shit.
Yeah, I'm about to watch Chappelle's Mark Twain Award.
Okay, cool. So yeah, we'll see y'all next week.
Later.
And that's what's popping in the world of entertainment. Thank you for listening to the Pop Life Podcast with Jeffrey, Naima, and Sean. Want to be a part of the show? We've got 3 ways you can get involved. Like us on Facebook. Send us your burning questions to poplifepodcast@gmail.com and follow us on Twitter @poplifepodcast. Talk to you next week.